What is up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. I am recording this on Sunday, June 16th. We had game four of the NBA Finals with the Dallas Mavericks and the Boston Celtics being played a couple nights ago on Friday night. After Boston had gone up 3-0 in the series, Dallas bounced back in a big way, running Boston out of the gym. So just going to talk through what was different in this one compared to the other games in this series and what both teams need to do moving forward to either extend it in Dallas's case or in Boston's case, take this thing home and win championship number 18 for the franchise. So with that being said, let's get right into it. So after Boston went up 3-0 and had pretty much dominated this series in almost every facet, there was not a lot of belief in Dallas. It's pretty tough to muster up the confidence when you've been thoroughly outplayed as much as Dallas had. So I think most people just assumed that Boston was going to win game four and close this thing out. But Dallas showed the requisite fight that was needed to extend this series. And they just looked like the better team in this one out of the gate. It was night and day in terms of the energy level, the effort level from the Maverick side of things. And they were up 15-14 before going on a 10-0 run to put them up 25-14 early. A lot of this was due to the early energy and boost that Derek Lively gave them. He came in midway in the first quarter, hit a corner three, an alley-oop. He blocked Tillman on a shot. He forced a second possession with an offensive rebound. And in just his first 9 minutes, he was a plus 18. And he wasn't the only one contributing. They were getting a ton of contributions from all the role guys, which has been a significant issue for them so far in the series. But I thought the bench really came in and changed this game early. Lively just couldn't have been better early. They got some good plays from Derrick Jones Jr. with the coast-to-coast up-and-under layup at the basket. Josh Green came in with a ton of energy as well. P.J. Washington was hitting three-pointers early. And then Luka and Kyrie were having their way. They had 22 points in the first quarter, and they were getting to all their spots. They were attacking Boston, getting into the paint specifically. Then Dante Exum came in. He had a tough drive to the basket, hit a couple three-pointers. Kleba finally hit a three. So they were getting contributions across the board. And the Celtics had a really rough offensive start. They were 1-for-7 from three to start. They had three early turnovers. And after Dallas was up 11 early, they just continued their run. That run got put out to a 24-7 run, in which they were then up 39-21 before it eventually got up to 50-25. The Celtics, I mean, they had 4 points on 1-of-8 shooting in just this first 6 minutes of the second quarter. They went almost a full quarter length of game time, so almost a full 12 minutes, scoring not even 10 points from the 57-second mark in the first quarter to the 127 mark in the second quarter. They only had 9 total points scored over that span. Meanwhile, Dallas was getting whatever they wanted offensively. And really, no one was able to do anything for Boston in the first half outside of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. The Mavericks found themselves up 61-35 at halftime. Kyrie and Luka had single-handedly outscored Boston at half. They had 36 of Dallas's 61, and Boston had only 35 as a team overall. The non-Brown and Tatum players on the Celtics at halftime were only 4 of 18 from the field, 12 points. And so this looked kind of reverse of what we've seen out of these teams so far. Dallas has really gotten almost no contributions, at least very limited contributions from the non-Kyrie and Luka players thus far. And that is basically what happened to Boston in this one. They weren't getting any contributions from their not top two guys. But it's not like those top two guys were lighting it up either. Because especially in that third quarter, the Celtics, obviously if you're them, you're down 26 at half. You're just trying to chip away, get it down to like a 12-point game heading into the fourth and see what could happen from that point on. But they weren't able to do so. Dallas continued to build the lead up. And Brown and Tatum in the third quarter were just as bad as the supporting cast had been in the first half. They had 2 points combined in the entire second half. They didn't play any of the fourth quarter, obviously. This was completely out of hand. Both teams started emptying the benches with about 3 to 4 minutes left in the third quarter. So this thing was over pretty quickly. And the fourth quarter, just total garbage time. I mean, both teams playing the end of the bench guys. Tim Hardaway Jr. actually came in and hit 5 three-pointers in the fourth quarter alone after not being able to hit a single shot the entire series. That's when you know you have it going, because this guy had been completely and utterly unplayable to this point in the series. But he comes out and is just red hot in that fourth against these Celtics bench warmers. But Boston found themselves in a hole as big as 48 points. Dallas was up at the midway point of the fourth quarter when it was 115-67 after Jaden Hardy had hit a three-pointer. And they end up losing this one, Boston does, by 38 points, the final score being 122-84. And that 38-point loss marks the third largest blowout in NBA Finals history. The two ahead of it are the 1998 Bulls, who won by 42, and then the 2008 Celtics, who won by 39 in their, ironically enough, their closeout game to win that series against the Lakers back in 2008. So this was so big of a blowout that despite coming into the series down 3-0, the Mavericks technically have outscored Boston in the series to this point in totality. They technically have a positive net rating in the series at plus 1.7 despite being down 3-1. They have outscored Boston 408-402 in total in the series. And so that doesn't mean much. It's very clearly a statistical anomaly just when you beat a team by that much. Because if anyone who's watched these four games would say Boston has clearly outplayed Dallas to this point. Just one bad game is skewing that down. But crazy enough, this was the first loss for the Celtics since May 9th, which sounds crazy, over a month of time. But on the Dallas side, Luka was so much better in this game than he had been, especially in game three, but really over the whole series. He had a really hot first half in game two. But other than that, he's been kind of leaving something to be desired in this series. He hasn't been consistently dominant from start to finish in any of the games offensively. We know how much of a mess he has been on the defensive end of the court, but he was much better in all these areas in this game. In the first half alone, he had 25 points on 10 of 16 shooting. He was absolutely dominant, and he was a little quieter in the second half. Only 4 points, but again, he didn't need to do much in this. They were already up 26 at that point, so it doesn't really matter. I'm not going to put much stake into the fact that he didn't shoot super well in that third quarter. He didn't even play in the fourth quarter, obviously, but he only had one turnover, which he had been sloppy with the ball throughout a lot of this series. I think he had 8 turnovers in one of the games, a couple offensive fouls in game three that cost him, and eventually he fouled out in that one. But most importantly, he was so much better defensively in this one. Nobody is asking him to be an all-defensive level player in this series. Nobody's asking him to guard the Celtics' best players, to be some lockdown guy. They just need him to participate defensively, which he has not been doing. He has not been participating. He is going out there with absolute minimum effort possible, and it's been costing them on that end of the court. But he was much better in this game on that end of the court. He was more engaged. He actually had 3 steals. He was not consistently getting blown by. Of course, he had a couple blow-bys, but that's going to happen in the span of a game, especially when you're playing a team as good as Boston with the offensive talent that they have. But he did his job within the scheme. He was making efforts in his rotations and in transition, and that's all they need from him. I actually thought there were a couple of different plays where he was really solid on that end of the court. And that's all they need him to do is just try, put in the energy and effort to like allow because the Dallas defense is really, really good, or at least has the potential to be really, really good. We've seen them be one of the best defensive teams, if not the best defensive team, for months now. They were the best defensive team for, I believe, the last 2 months of the season or something like that, and they've been spectacular on that end in the postseason as well. But all they need is Luka to be able to allow the rest of the guys to do their thing and not put them in such a disadvantageous spot because they've got to recover on him getting blown by. And it just collapses the defense, and now everybody's got to rotate. Everyone's out of their spot, and someone finds themselves wide open every single time. So he was a lot better there in this game, and that was, I mean, Boston only scored 84 points. I know they didn't make a ton of shots that they could have made, but a lot of that is because of the participation defensively by Luka. I also thought he was a lot more poised in this game. He was more composed on the offensive end. He was more focused on the right things. He did his classic when he got his first foul in the first quarter, put his hand up to say that one was on me. So at least he was making somewhat of an effort to not be super complaining to the refs. And I will say he had another game in the second round against OKC where he was really, really complaining to the refs and foul baiting a ton in that one too. And he bounced back the next game and had a similar one to this one where he took it to heart, was a little bit more focused, locked in, not letting that get in his head as much. And he did the same in this one. I thought he was really aggressive getting to his spots. He was spectacular getting into the paint specifically. He had more paint points in the first three quarters of this game than the Celtics had as an entire team. So he was really focused on being aggressive, attacking the Boston bigs, which without Porzingis is noticeably more vulnerable on that end, especially in that aspect to getting attacked by the guards. He has still struggled a bit outside. He was 0 for 8 from 3 in this one. But again, that didn't matter as much because he was being aggressive and getting to his spots, which is really all they need him to do. And his defensive improvement in this game is, as I said, helped Dallas a ton. But I also want to call out, like, Dallas's defense, despite all the discourse and all of the shit that they've gotten, specifically Luka, by myself and many others, has actually been quite good if you look at some of the numbers. I mean, the real issue for them in this series has been their offense. Like, just boiling down to simply just points scored. I mean, they had 89 in game one, 98 in game two, and 99 in game three. You can't expect to win a series against Boston if you can't get to 100 points. Boston literally had the highest offensive rating for a team in NBA history this season. You've got to be able to put up points. Meanwhile, the Celtics game one had 107, game two, 105, game three, 106. Like, those are really solid numbers to be holding Boston to, a team that, as I said, had the best offensive rating in the history of the sport this season. And so I really think that the Luka blowbys are the only thing that's held them back from being like at the same level they've been defensively in this series, because they've been good. And we saw what they can look like when he's a bit more engaged on the defensive end. I mean, 84 points in this one is really impressive to hold a team this talented and this good on offensively to that low of a number, especially only 35 in the first half when all their starters and everybody was still playing before garbage time. But let's just look at Boston's offensive rating in this series. It currently sits at 109.6. On the season, they had 123.2. in the regular season. In the first round, they were at 120.3. The second round, they were at 121.7. And then in the conference finals, they were at 122.7. So they have been consistently at 120 or higher from an offensive rating standpoint, which is up there with some of the best of all time, as I said. But in this series, they're below 110, which is super impressive on Dallas's part. So they have done a pretty good job defensively, despite all of the discourse surrounding Luka and his effort on that end. I mean, the Celtics in this series are shooting below 34% from three. We keep expecting them to have one of those 20 for 40 games, but that big barrage has not come yet. And maybe it will in game five. Maybe Dallas will win and it'll come in game six. Maybe it'll never come. But the point is, it hasn't come yet. And particularly their top two guys have really struggled from outside. Brown is only 6 for 25 in the series. That's 24% from three. Tatum is 9 for 31. That's 29% from three. And so Dallas has done a really good job defending Boston and not letting them have their 20-plus made three-pointer night that we have become so accustomed to them having on a pretty frequent basis, and just bothering them a little bit on that end of the court. So I just want to call that out and say that Dallas's biggest issue really has been their offense, not their defense. And we saw on Friday night that when Luka is at least participating, they can be extremely effective defensively. And we also saw this in the fourth quarter of last game, in game three, when Dallas went on a 22-2 run and Boston went 8 minutes only scoring 2 points. Like, we know that they are capable of defending this team at a high level. It's just how consistent will their effort be on that end, specifically Luka. And if it's high, then they can be really effective, but they need to figure out how to continue to do better offensively than they did in the first couple games. So a big part of that is Kyrie Irving. In game one and two, he averaged 14 points per game on only 35% shooting. He didn't make a single three-pointer. He was 0 of 8 from three, and he was a minus 22 in those two games combined. Games three and four have been night and day. He averaged 28 points per game on 50% over the last two games. He's shooting just under 42% from three in that span, and he's a plus 25. So he has been significantly better. I said that I thought he could struggle in this series just based on the personnel that Boston has and the guys they can throw at Kyrie. And that was the case early on. But of course, I didn't think he was going to be averaging 14 points per game for the series. It was only a matter of time before he started to get going a little bit and figure some stuff out. And I think a big reason why is because he's been able to put himself in better situations with better matchups. I thought the first two games he played a lot of ISO. He did not try to mismatch hunt really at all. He was just going at whatever defender was in front of him, mostly Holiday and White and sometimes Brown. And that was not a good formula for him because those guys are all great defenders and they can do just about as good of a job on Kyrie as anyone's going to be able to do. But I think in the last two games, he's done a lot better at getting big switched onto him. And part of that is because Porzingis hasn't been playing. And so they haven't had to worry about him as a defender, which has forced them to play Horford and Tillman and other guys more minutes. But, I mean, even just look in the first quarter of this game, Kyrie was constantly trying to get Horford switched onto him. And then when Tillman came in, he was doing the same with Tillman. And so I think he's been getting better matchups, guys that he can blow by easily, guys that he can do a crossover, dribble, step back move, and he's going to be able to create space a lot more easily. And he's been getting to the basket more. I thought he was settling for a ton of really tough jumpers in the first couple games. Again, it's Kyrie Irving. Those are shots that we know he can make. However, that's not, in the long run, it's going to be very difficult for you to make those at a high rate if you're continuing to only get super difficult shots. And so I think he's done a better job of getting to the basket, taking better shots. His shot profile has just been better the past couple of games. And I also think he's just making some shots that we know he can make that he was kind of missing in the first few games. I mean, he was 0 for 8 from 3 in those first two games. I think at least 4 or 5 of those were like completely wide open and he just wasn't knocking them down. So you knew it was only a matter of time before some of those were going to start to go in. But I also think, like I said, he's putting himself in better position. And I've said this as a big factor in this series. They need Kyrie to be one of the two or three best players in the series. If he's the fourth best guy offensively, they're not going to win the series. They're not going to win many games in this series. And in the first two games, he was not even one of the five or six best guys on the court. But he's been extremely good the last two games, and they need him to continue that play if they want to have any chance to make this into a somewhat of a competitive series. PJ Washington has also started to get it going a little bit. He was scoring fine in the first two games, but all of his shots, it felt like, were him attacking closeouts and driving in to get 2 points, which of course they'll take the points, but that's exactly what Boston wants him to do. They want to run him off the 3-point line, make him into a guy driving to the basket rather than shooting open corner threes. He's gotten more 3-point looks in the past couple games and less drives to the basket. He's shooting 5 for 9 from 3-point range the last two games. So he's starting to make shots from outside, which has been much needed because they were not getting any shots from downtown in the first couple games. And again, a huge reason why Dallas just hadn't been able to score enough points to be able to keep up with Boston. But I think the biggest reason outside of Luka and Kyrie obviously just playing super well in this one and the defensive effort that Dallas gave that they were able to win this is because I thought they get some really good minutes out of three guys specifically, Dante Exum, Josh Green, and Derek Lively. I really cannot say enough good things about Derek Lively. He has been so, so impressive for a guy who is in his first season in the NBA, for a guy who's only 20 years old, for a guy who even in college didn't start for half the season, who missed a good chunk of the season at Duke as a freshman because of injuries, had a setback early in the season. And so this is a guy who averaged like 4 points a game or something. He was not a huge, huge factor. By the end of the season with Duke, he was extremely effective as a shot blocker, rim protector. He was the defensive anchor for that team. But that's about it. And that was only for a couple weeks of the season because he was very up and down throughout the most of the season before that. But he's been so much better and more impressive than you ever could have thought for a guy in his position. I mean, he is instant energy the second he comes into the game. He is a very good offensive rebounder. He is a very strong finisher going to the basket when he gets passes from the guards. He's an elite rim protector. He's so good at going straight up and not fouling. He's a very good passer in the short roll, something that, it's, for example, Gafford does not excel at, but he makes good decisions. He's got high basketball IQ. He can make the right reads, make the right passes, which is so impressive for a 20-year-old seven-footer like he is. And now he hit a three in this game, so I'm like, if he's going to start hitting corner threes, then that just is going to make – it's going to be a whole other animal Lively will be moving forward. Do I expect him to start knocking down a bunch of threes in this series? No, I do not. However, I do think that the Dallas people say that they think that that is something that's going to be in his repertoire in the future. And if it is, then the sky is the limit for this guy. I don't think he's ever going to be a Joel Embiid type dominant center. Of course not. But it's easy to forget that this guy was the number one overall recruit coming out of high school. So, like, this guy has the pedigree. And so he is, I can't say enough good things about him. I've been so impressed with him, not only just from the regular season, but his impact in this postseason. Such a smart player. He competes super hard on both ends of the court, always in the right spots and making the right decisions. So I thought Lively was spectacular in this game. In games 3 and 4, he's averaging 11 points, 12 and a half rebounds. He's 9 for 11 from the field, so he's been a much bigger impact guy in this latter two games of this series. After having a pretty bad first two games, looked a little overmatched, he was minus 15 in game 1, a minus 15 in game 2 as well. But since then, he has been the best big on Dallas without a doubt, and he's been giving Boston trouble. And I think a big part of that is because the absence of Porzingis has allowed him to shine more because he's playing against more traditional bigs like Horford and Tillman and whatnot. But going down the list of those other guys, Dante Exum is now 3 for 5 from three in the series. Low volume, but he's been making shots. He's been aggressive with the ball. He's an extra ball handler out there for them. This is a guy who I came into the league, top 5 pick, and was supposed to be like a point guard of sorts. Now they have him playing shooting guard, small forward sometimes because he does have size to do so. But he's really solid on the defensive end. He's been making shots more than any other guy on Dallas that isn't Kyrie or Luka from outside. And he's a little better with the ball than the other role players that Dallas has been throwing out there. So I said this as a potential adjustment after game 2, that I thought they should play Exum more. They should get more guys out there that can take the ball out of Luka and Kyrie's hands to maybe make their lives a little easier, drive that usage rate down a bit, allow other guys to run the offense a bit, get easier shots for Luka and Kyrie. And Exum's done a really good job of that. And so I think he should be getting more minutes than he has been getting. He, a couple of these games, got one short stint, and then Kidd yanked him for the rest of the game. But I've liked what I've seen out of him. Josh Green, same sort of thing. His stats aren't going to look crazy. He's only 2 for 5 from three in this series. So again, super low volume. But I personally have really liked the minutes when he's out there. Like, I think he just makes a bigger impact out there than Derrick Jones Jr. has, for example, so far in this series. He's definitely a more consistent shooter than Jones. But I think he's been very good defensively. He was out on the court during the 22-2 run at the end of game 3 as well. And I thought he was competing hard defensively and making things difficult for Boston on that end. As I said, I just trust him as a shooter a little bit more. And I think he's been very solid. And so I think they should try to move away from Derrick Jones Jr. a little bit in favor of guys like Exum and Green. Because, look, Jones Jr. just has not shot well and he has not played well. He hasn't been super impactful defensively. He isn't generating a lot of offense and he's not making the open shots he is getting. And just looking at some of the plus minuses as the sample size of this is getting a little bigger. Dante Exum in this series is a plus 22. Josh Green is a plus 4. Derrick Jones Jr. is a minus 7. And even if let's take out game 4 because the plus minuses were a little crazy in that game. Even just games 1 through 3, Dante Exum still was a plus 7 in the first 3 games, despite them losing all 3 of those games. Josh Green was a minus 12, which doesn't look great, but not as bad as Derrick Jones Jr., who was a minus 23. So I know it's very naive at times to try to look at plus minus and not take into account the other factors of like who you're playing with, who you're playing against, and it's just not a great stat all the time in general. But it just shows that like the minutes with Green and Exum have been pretty solid in my opinion, and the Derrick Jones minutes have been not as good or consistent across the board. And so to me, if I were them, a couple things I would consider from Jason Kidd is to start Lively and Josh Green and to give Exum more consistent minutes, 15 to 20 minutes or something like that. And look, the Mavs have already started abandoning Daniel Gafford a little bit. He didn't even get to 10 minutes in game 4, despite it being such a blowout. And conversely, Lively played 22, Kleba played 23, but Kleba wasn't really in the rotation in game 3. So he's been a little inconsistent with the big man minutes. But I think it's pretty obvious that Lively has been the best, most impactful player in terms of their big man rotation in this series. They've had their best stretches when he was out there. When they went on that big 22-2 run, Lively was the center, and he was making things happen on both ends of the court. Josh Green was out there for that run as well, and Derrick Jones Jr. got benched on the stretch, and that's when they really played some of their best basketball. And so I don't really understand this obsession with like keeping the continuity of the lineup, and like Gafford didn't even play 10 minutes. But they know that, and they know Lively's probably going to play more than it, but they still keep starting Gafford. So it's not that huge of a deal if the guys are getting more minutes anyway. But I just think that why not go out there with what, in my opinion, has been their best 5 players in this series, or at least be more willing to go to it more quickly. Like, don't get too caught up in, oh, this is the lineup that's gotten us here. Like, these guys have outplayed those guys. So I would move more towards those guys. I would not have the short leash on Dante Exum that they've had thus far. I would give him a little bit more of a chance. Not to mention, it's not like he's played badly in the games he got yanked early. So I don't really understand that. I would cut Derrick Jones' minutes in half, give some of them to Exum, give some of them to Josh Green, and just see what that gets you. Because in my opinion, those are the guys who have played the best for Dallas instead of Jones and Gafford. But aside from that, I think they should continue to do a lot of the things they did in this game. They crashed the offensive boards, which was a huge plus for them in this game, and they completely dominated Boston in that aspect. They played with a little bit more pace, which I think we've called out a couple times. I know Indiana had success doing that against Boston and offensively, and you could see that Dallas was able to break down the Boston defense when they didn't have to go against them in the half court as consistently. They were able to get into the paint more. They were getting downhill to the basket more, taking advantage of the mismatches, getting the big switched on to people so that they could get downhill and into the paint. And then, goes without saying, increased defensive effort and intensity has been huge for them in that game. And like I said, they haven't really been that bad on that end. It's just been Luka has been holding them back a bit from getting to their peak potential there. But if he continues his effort that he had in game 4, then I think they have a really good chance to continue to bother Boston on that end as the numbers back up that they've definitely bothered them a little bit so far. On the Boston side of things, I think they're really starting to miss Porzingis a little bit. At least they did in game 4. They got absolutely demolished on the rebounds in this game. Game 4, Dallas had 52 rebounds to Boston's 31. I know rebounding is a skewed stat because if you miss more often, then the other team is going to have more opportunity to get defensive rebounds. So I'm not going to boil it down to something that simple, but Dallas did have 13 offensive rebounds in this game. That's 13 extra possessions. So there's no doubt about it that they got thoroughly out rebounded in this one, regardless of field goal percentage. Dallas got 62.7% of all total rebounds in this one. So that was a big advantage for them. it was apparent while you were watching that they were getting extra possessions. The Mavericks had almost 41% offensive rebound percentage in game four as well. And then game three was not nearly as drastic, but Dallas still did out rebound Boston 43-36, which the field goal percentage argument isn't really in play for that one because Boston outplayed Dallas in that game. So they've been consistently winning the numbers on the glass. And of course, it's not like Porzingis is some 12, 13 rebound per game guy, but he's still one of the leading rebounders on the team. He was second in rebounds per game on this team after Jason Tatum. And so without him, they're having to rely on more of a by committee approach, especially with the fact that Horford isn't exactly a great rebounder for his position at this point in his career, and neither is a guy like Xavier Tillman. So they're relying on the guards and the wings to help out there. I also, as I said previously about Kyrie, I think the Kyrie and Luka and the rest of the Mavs have done a really good job of attacking the bigs more. This is one of the adjustments I called out after game two, and I think that they have done a much better job in this aspect. They were settling too much for the matchups that were presented to them in the first couple games. They were letting Boston dictate who was defending which player, and now it feels like Dallas is dictating who is the one guarding their offensive players at any given time. They've done a much better job getting Horford switched out onto the guards, of getting Tillman switched out onto the guards, and it's led to Dallas getting into the paint more easily. They're able to blow by these bigger guys. They're able to get more separation on jump shots because the guys are more slow-footed out there. And so Dallas in this one, they dominated in the paint as well, and that's a big reason why. It's one of the big reasons why Kyrie's been able to get going, why Luka's been able to get going, especially in the first halves of these games. And the lack of Porzingis is a reason for this, because Porzingis is a better player guarding out there than Horford is at this point. He's also the only rim protector that Boston has. Horford is just not a rim protector. He can still be a good defender in certain aspects, but not as a rim deterrent or a guy in the paint that's going to go and block shots out there. Xavier Tillman, same sort of thing. Good defender, but not a rim protector. He's just more of a big body. Same with Al Horford at this point. And so the Mavs have had no resistance in the paint. And without Porzingis, that's been the driving force for that. And so Dallas is getting into the paint. They're not scared to take it in there. They'll take their chances against Al Horford in the paint. And as a result, they're taking better shots. The Mavs are not taking nearly as many long twos and as they were earlier in the series. In game four, they had one total long two-point attempt, a long mid-range shot. In games one, two, and three, they had 26 of those shots. That was good for almost 9 per game. So game four was a totally different approach. They basically abandoned the mid-range, at least the long mid-range, and were way more determined to get to the rim, get close to the basket, and no Porzingis is a big reason for that. There's a reason everyone's talked about the importance of him, and this is probably the number one reason, is rim deterrence, which Boston just has none of anymore. And so the rebounding, the lack of rim protection, all things that have really hurt Boston without Porzingis. And I called out maybe they should try some small ball, and they did a little bit in this game. Not for very long, but they tried it for at least a couple possessions, couple minutes out there, and they got destroyed. It was not, it did not work. They got destroyed specifically on the glass and defensively. They didn't get a single rebound in those minutes. 0% rebound percentage for themselves in this game with their small ball lineup. They only had a handful of possessions, like I said, but they've done this a little more in the playoffs than maybe we've given them credit for. They've done it in previous series, but overall, the results have been very bad. In the playoffs so far, they've allowed a 60% offensive rebound percentage when they go small ball, so getting absolutely crushed on the boards. They have a minus 74.1 net rating, 100 offensive rating and 174 defensive rating. So they've been atrocious defensively when they implement this small ball lineup. They have not been able to get a single rebound. So maybe that is something they should stay away from moving forward. But look, they are missing Porzingis. There's really no way around it, specifically on the glass and defending the paint. But the reason they were so bad in this game was, to be honest, more about their offense. I thought it was ugly out there for them. They had basically no ball movement at all. They were turning it over at a really high rate. They had 18% turnover rate in the non-garbage time minutes, which is very high. There was just too much perimeter action. They weren't getting anything into the paint. And it was very reminiscent of when that early third quarter in game one, where it looked like Boston might let Dallas get back into it. They were just avoiding the paint on offense basically entirely. And so that's what made their offense get bogged down a little bit. Just to put in perspective, in the non-garbage time minutes in this game, they had only 9 field goal attempts at the rim. Comparatively, Dallas had 24. And if we're looking at the short mid-range, so close in the paint, they had only 14 shots here, and Dallas had 21. So if we're looking at just short shots total, so short mid-range shots and shots at the rim, Boston had 23 of those in the non-garbage time minutes of this game, and Dallas had 43. And so that right there is, it tells you all you need to know. Dallas dominated every aspect of the paint in this game. Rebounding, scoring, defending. Dallas was much better across the board. And Boston was just too perimeter-oriented, which if you're making all your threes, that can be a strategy. But if you're not going to knock down your shots, then it's really difficult to compete in games when you aren't getting anything in the paint at any time. And as I mentioned, with Luka not getting beat so much in this game, it didn't create many advantages for Boston. They just didn't have a lot of times where they were able to kick to a wide open guy because they had beat someone off the dribble, because they weren't penetrating very much and they weren't getting advantages off the matchups that they were given, because Luka played a little bit better on that end. At least they also were playing almost an exclusively half court game on offense. They didn't have a single transition point in this one. They played 94% of their possessions in the half court. Comparatively, Dallas had 81% of theirs in the half court. So they did a lot better job getting out in transition. So just too much bogged down offense, not getting in the paint, not moving the ball enough, not creating advantages on that end, and then just no rim deterrence, no effort or energy on the offensive glass at all compared to Dallas, who dominated there. And Boston, if they're going to go with this rebound by committee, has to be committed to it, because they just weren't in this game. But just going down the team, Jason Tatum is officially having a bad series. I know there was so much discussion about how he was still contributing in different aspects of the game as a passer, as a defender, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, in this series, game one, 16 points on 6 for 16 shooting. Game two, 18 points on 6 for 22 shooting. 1 for 7 from 3 in that game. Game three, he had 31, but he finished the game 5 for his last 16 after a 6 for 10 start, and he was only 4 for 13 from 3. Game four, 15 points on 4 of 10 shooting. So I don't know what more we need to see from a sample size perspective. And I'm sorry that this idea that he's sacrificing, and he's got quotes saying like, I don't need to be the scorer all the time, blah, blah, blah. It's not like he's like deferring and taking less shots, and that's why his numbers are down. Like, his usage rate is right about 30% in this series. He's taken 13 more field goal attempts than the next highest player in Jaylen Brown. He's averaging 18.5 field goal attempts per game in this series, and he averaged 19.3 in the regular season, so slightly down. But that's skewed, because he didn't even play the last 15 minutes of this last game, for example, which he obviously would have gotten probably 5+ more shots in that one, so that would have been right on par with his regular season. So it's not like he's sacrificing touches or anything like that. He's averaging only 20 points per game in this on 36.5% from the field, 29% from three. His true shooting is below 49%. Like, he's just having a bad series. I'm not going to defend him anymore and say, oh, well, look what he's doing as a playmaker. He had one really good playmaking game with his double-digit assists. Since then, he's been basically doing what he has done all season as a playmaker, which has been a good playmaker, not world-changing, 6-7 assists per game. And, of course, he's the best rebounder on the team, but they got killed in that aspect in this game. He's still a good defender, but, again, that can only go so far. You cannot be the guy averaging 20 points per game on 49% true shooting. Like, he's having a bad series, and this is now two finals that he's had very subpar performances in. And so I was going to wait it out, give him a couple games, see if maybe he could turn it around, but he hasn't. Like, you got a chance to close out the NBA finals and you put up 15 points. He made 4 total shots in this game. It's just, it's not going to be good enough. And Brown has stepped up to be the number one guy in most of these games for them. But in this one, Brown had 10 points on 3 of 12 shooting. And this is the exact kind of game where when Brown's not playing well, Tatum, his job should be to step up. He's got to be the guy that can give you 25 on nights where your other guys don't have it. And he hasn't been able to do that. One game of even 20 points scored at any point in the series is just not going to be good enough. So, look, he's, as far as I'm concerned, if they win this, he's basically out of the running for finals MVP unless he puts up maybe some like 50 piece in game four and Brown doesn't, or game five and Brown doesn't play that well. But we'll see if that's even on the table for him. But just a little disappointing. It's not catastrophic for Boston. They're still up 3-1, but you just want to see more out of your supposed superstar and the guy that's the face of the franchise. But of course, he wasn't the only one that was bad in this. I already mentioned Brown didn't shoot well. White and Holiday were also really bad. White had only 6 points off 2 of 8 shooting for all of those attempts coming from three. So he, as I said, they weren't getting into the paint at all. White didn't even take a 2-point attempt. Drew Holiday, 10 points on 4-10 shooting. He had some weird turnover stuff in this game. I mean, he had had none in the first three games, had 5 in this game. So just totally sloppy with the ball. Horford was out there just getting cardio, basically. 3 points in 23 minutes, only 1 shot attempt, only 3 rebounds. Just completely unimpactful in this game whatsoever, which, again, when Porzingis doesn't play, they kind of need him to be impactful because then they're getting basically nothing out of the center spot on this team. Then we've got Peyton Pritchard, who I haven't talked about much in the series because, you know, they were up 3-0. Doesn't really matter what the backup point guard's doing for the team that's up. However, he has been like otherworldly bad in this series. He finished this game for 5 for 14, but all of that came in garbage time, essentially. Before the fourth quarter of this last game, he had been 2 for 18 from the field. So in non-garbage time, 2 for 18 from the field, only 1 for 12 from three. And you have to remember that one of those shots, the 1 3-pointer he made, was that half-court heave at the end of the third quarter in one of the earlier games. So he came into game four shooting 1 for 13 from the field, and his one make was a half-court heave. So he has been utterly unplayable, but it hasn't really mattered because they've just been so good everywhere else. But this is going to be more of a talking point if they continue to let this series get extended, because he has been so catastrophically bad offensively, and that's really the only thing he's out there to do. He's not much of a defender anyway, and he's not doing much playmaking either. And so if he's going to come out there and put up just zeros across the board, it's going to hurt them, especially in games where Drew Holiday and Derek White don't play well like they did in this one. But as I said, nobody played well for Boston in this. There's not really a single person you could point to and say, well, at least they played pretty well. Like in the first half, as I mentioned, the non-Tatum and Brown guys had only 12 points on 4 of 18 shooting. Then in the second half, Brown and Tatum combined for 2 points on 0 of 3 shooting, didn't make a single basket. And so they just, it was as much as like game one, I talked about like a real team victory. This was a real team defeat. Nobody played well. They just didn't have the energy. They didn't come out with any sort of like intent to dictate the matchups on offense or defense. They didn't come out with the same energy and effort level that Dallas had. And then we've seen them kind of do that in other games, like in game three. But they, when they got punched, they punched back. And in this game, they did not punch back at all. Zero effort. So I'll say that I'm not worried for Boston even remotely. This is their first loss since May 9th. I just don't understand how you can not lose for over a month and then lose, and then we're going to sit here and act like it's a big deal. Like, let's not overreact to this at all. It's a throwaway game as far as I'm concerned. And it could even be good for them in sort of a wake-up call, because they've been one of the better teams in the league at bouncing back after losses. We've seen them have some lackluster performances in the postseason to this point, once against Miami, once against Cleveland. And in both times, they bounced back for blowout wins on the road in the following game. So they haven't lost back-to-back games the entire playoffs. They've only lost back-to-back games 4 times the entire season. And so my concern level for Boston is like a 2% right now. Like, I'm not even... Anyone who's sitting here like, oh, well, someone's going to be the first to come back. Like, it's 3-0. It's not happening. And if it's ever going to happen, it's not going to be in this series where Boston is just so clearly the better team. And so it's just one game. They are still going to win this series. If I had to bet money on it, I would bet that they close it out in game five. It's just Luka and Dallas, they had extra juice because they didn't want to get swept. We've seen it happen. Just look at the Timberwolves Mavs series in the conference finals. The Wolves came out with much more energy and effort in game four. They didn't want to get swept and then went right back to Mavs dominating game five. So I think it's going to be something similar to that. But if you're Dallas, I mean, you can talk yourself into feeling good about yourself. Not only did they dominate this game, obviously, by 38 points, but they dominated Boston in the fourth quarter of game three. So it's now five straight quarters of them pretty much completely dominating Boston. But I'll be honest, I don't really care about margin of victory. Dallas could have won by 1 point. They could have won by 50 points. I'm going to feel exactly the same. There's really no correlation with how much you beat someone by and how it affects the next game or anything like that. So Boston will win this series. I think they will win the next game. I won't even entertain the idea of Dallas making this competitive until they win game five. And if they win game five, then sure, I'll start to, my 2% might get up to like a 15 to 20%. But still, it's just like when you go down 3-0, you put yourself in too much of a hole. We saw it last year with Boston against Miami. A lot of people were like, oh, Boston might actually come back and win this once it got to game seven. But then Tatum twists his ankle. Everyone's like, well, if Tatum didn't get hurt. And I'm like, well, that's why you don't put yourself in that position. Don't go down 3-0 to Miami so that you have to have a game seven to decide the series when you should have just taken care of business earlier. And so that's how I feel about this. Boston is still the better team. They're still up 3-1. I don't care what the net rating or series score says in terms of points total. Like, they're going to win the series. And I have really no doubt in my mind about it. And that's going to do it for this episode of the Sean Jones NBA Show. Thank you so much for listening. Got game five back in Boston tomorrow night on Monday. So Boston will have a chance to close this thing out at home, or Dallas will have a chance to extend it to a game six that will be back in Dallas as well. But regardless, I'm excited. I'm glad Dallas finally got on the board, got a little bit of confidence, can make this at least somewhat interesting. But ultimately, like I said, I think Boston's probably got this just based on the fact that they went on 3-0. But regardless of what happens, I will have a reaction pod come up after that game as well, whether that be to talk about game five specifically or to talk about the series as a whole and Boston's season as a whole. But with that being said, thank you so much for listening, and I will chat with you soon.